Matthias Fallina was born in Chicago, where his parents were both chemists. He is the author of three books, most recently, The Explosions. With Alisa Heinzman, Hajara Quinn, and Zachary Schoenberg, he co-edits Octopus Books. Big Lux will release his book Wastoid this year. Welcome, Matthias. Will you begin by reading a poem from your first book?
Sure. This is a poem called Creation Myth from the book Destruction Myth. Creation Myth. In the beginning, there was a great flood that destroyed the cities, and then someone started a small fire that set off all the smoke alarms. Everyone died except for the fox, the word, and the blender. The blender said to the fox and the word, "We shall start a new civilization that will not replicate the prejudices and iniquities of the former civilization." Pretty soon the blender and the fox realized that the word was kind of a jerk. He wore mismatching Converse All-Stars. He had a big collection of collectible fantasy knives, and he liked to talk about his knives all the time. They buried him up to his neck in drying cement so that he could continue to talk but would not be able to purchase any more collectible fantasy knives. Another person I hate is this guy Richard I went to elementary school with. He was super smart, and I was sort of a loser, and we became friends because no one else would talk to us. I really screwed him over. I hear he's teaching at Caltech now. Haven't thought about him in years.
I love that poem so much. There is, of course, in the beginning was the word as a kind of ghost to the word that's in this poem. And then it has this volta, where this drastic turn towards Richard, which I love. Could you talk about the composition of the poem?
I could, but it'd all be speculation at this point.
Okay.
I wrote these poems about 8 years ago, and I wrote probably about 100 or 120 of them, and then over the course of 2 months, and then whittled them down to the 44 that ended up in the book. I don't have a lot of memory of that. I know Richard Scalzo is probably an amazing guy, and I don't hate him at all. But I was a jerk to him in elementary school, and it's been a constant haunting to me. So he's actually shown up in a lot of my poems here and there, always as like this like ghost of being a jerk past or something that I wish I could change, but I can't. So I know that the volta here is something that is pretty consistent to this book about sort of overlaying the more traditional rhetoric of myth and fable with kind of willfully artless stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
and having what I think of as like non-literary or non-poetic language or rhetorical constructions offset by this like fable structure.
Yeah, the allegory is present in the poems, but then it turns into where you don't know what's being allegorized. It's a fascinating book. And for listeners who aren't familiar with the book, each poem is titled Creation Myth, and the last poem is Destruction Myth. And on the page, they appear to be prose poems.
Most of them. There's some that are lineated, but I think it's more dominated by prose poems.
And how do you feel about the prose poem? It's a poem you're returning to in Wastoid. I don't know. Some people think it's pejorative to even call them prose poems.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
I tend to write in two different modes. One that's more sort of lineated and a bit more cryptic. And then prose poems in which I tend toward more kind of absurdist narrative and sort of silliness. Mm-hmm. I guess so. The poem Above the Fold that's in my last book, The Explosions, is sort of the kind of more short lyric stuff that I do. And those tend toward things that are more personal, that I actually feel like are representative of my life or diaristic. I have a manuscript called The Wine Dark Sea that has been published here and there, but it's not out as a book, but that's kind of like that. So the prose poem to me works very much like a container for silly stuff. I do these kind of obsessive serial projects. So I have a book of spells. I have a book that I'm working on that's going to be a brief biography of everybody I've ever met in my entire life. So
That sounds fun. It also reminds me, the spells book reminds me of Spicer's magic workshop.
Yeah.
Is he an influence or no?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I ran a little workshop in Denver last summer called the Sun Workshop that was consciously modeled on some things that Spicer was doing, but trying to do a generative intellectual salon kind of thing, but outside of any university hierarchy or any sort of telos of what we were going to gain out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably less rude than Spicer, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, he can be abrasive at times.
Yeah, even his questionnaire to get into it, which I think is available on, I know it's somewhere online, but there's
it's a great questionnaire,
it
though.
Is. Yeah. I've made my students fill it out in the past.
Questionnaire for entrance to a poetry workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Spicer.
It's very judgy.
Yeah, it is evaluative. I would love for you to talk about this project you're doing during the month of June called Dream Delivery Service.
I'm taking subscribers, and I will every day write their dream. I won't consult with them. They won't be aware it's their dream until they receive it from me. And for those who are within a 3-mile radius of my house in Denver, I'm going to hand deliver them, hopefully before they wake up. And for those who are outside of Denver, I'll be mailing them every day. So I'm taking 100 subscribers. And then there's going to be some other ways that people can subscribe to other people's dreams if they have a signed permission form. So I need to get a verification from the dreamer that she or he is allowing the recipient to receive their dream. So I'll be writing 100 poems a day and delivering them.
It's a provocative project in its scope and ambition. I have to be honest, when I first read about it on your Tumblr, I thought, how can Messias write my dream? It's mine. And I feel like that's, probably lots of people have thought that. How can you write my dream?
I'm not sure because I haven't written any of them yet. So I guess I won't find out until June.
There's something very attractive about actually receiving mail.
Yeah.
And
somebody joked that people would subscribe $55 just to get a letter in the mail every day.
And why not? Why not? I love it. Will you read for us, please, a new poem from Wastoid?
Sure. This is from Wastoid, which, as you mentioned, is coming out from Big Lux Press in the fall. Every poem is called Wastoid in here. Wastoid. A man fell in love with a bomb. The bomb was strapped to another man's chest, and the man grew jealous. The other man carried the bomb into a busy street and detonated it. Many people died, and many cars were damaged. After the police left the scene, the man went to the busy street and searched for pieces of the bomb. He was happy the other man was gone, but unhappy that the bomb was no longer a bomb. He collected pieces of shrapnel that may have been from the bomb. He collected footage of the bomb exploding. He sat on his blue futon and watched the footage on repeat, stroking the sharp shrapnel until his fingers felt like sponges.
I love that poem. I just taught that poem, and my students and I were talking about how effectively it captures emotion, yet in a kind of strange way or in an estranged way. They were moved by it, and yet it's talking about a bomb and a man having a bomb strapped to him, which is something that's become frequent-ish in the news. I'm just curious if it was kind of a take on removing the journalese and giving these men emotions, or not at all, or
I'm not sure. I think it's more to me, and this is not to dismiss anybody else's reading of it, a play with what has become one of the modern icons. The 70s terrorist icon was the plane hijacker, and those kind of images of the hijackers emerging from the plane, and then the more modern icon has been one of self-immolation, of self-destruction, of planes into buildings, or the individual self becoming the weapon.
It resonates. It really does.
Yeah, one of the things definitely in writing these poems, because they're all love poems, but they're all absurdist, is that if I could figure out the logic of what the associations were doing, I would get very, very bored.
Sure.
So thinking through the possible readings of a poem for me is not a generative act. So even right now, I started to go in one direction, and I was like, I don't know if that's right. And then...
Change directions.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, the moment that I say it, then that's what it's going to mean to me, and then it's no longer an aesthetic experience for me. Because what I love about absurdism is its complete failure for any true closure. You know, that the absurd always requires lack.
Yeah. Well, I have a question. If someone's listening and they're thinking, I would love to write an absurd poem, but I don't know how, what would you say to that listener?
I know how I do it, and I don't know if that's a way that would be helpful to another person. But for me, it's more of a process of containment. So having a recognizable form or rhetoric. To me, all these poems are sonnets, even though they're not lineated and don't obey the metric rules or rhyme scheme. They are the intellectual structures of the sonnet sequence are all there for me. So having that structure, then you just have to sort of pick out pieces that make no sense and then try to figure out, or I try to figure out how that making no sense creates its own functional illogic. Again, I don't even know if that's true now that I'm looking at the poem.
it's a starting point, though. I like it. Thank you so much, Matthias, for joining us.
Thanks for being fantastic, and thanks for having me here.